Welcome back, everyone. We're taking another deep dive today, and this one's a real head-scratcher in the world of adoption law. It's Groves v. Clark.
Oh, yeah, that's a big one.
This whole case, it really boils down to, post-adoption visitation agreements. Like, can birth parents actually make those stick after, an adoption's been finalized?
It's a question that's been around for a while. In this case, it really kicked off a whole lot of discussion and honestly forced the courts to, really wrestle with how we think about open adoption. It's more common now than it used to be.
Right. So to kind of paint the picture, we're going back to 1994, Montana. We've got Debbie Groves, and she makes this incredibly tough decision to relinquish custody of her daughter. Her name's Elsie, and she goes to Lutheran Social Services. But there's a twist. She's not just, walking away. She signs a visitation agreement. She wants to stay in the picture, keep that connection going.
And that's a really important point, right? That desire to stay connected, to have a relationship even after the adoption. That's what makes this case so different, from the more traditional adoptions where it's kind of a clean break, like a closed door.
Yeah, I hear you. Okay, so fast forward a bit. Elsie ends up being adopted by this couple, Lon and Laura Lee Clark. At first, everything seems, pretty straightforward. They stick to the visitation agreement. But then they decide, they want to stop the visits. And that's when things get all tangled up in the legal weeds.
You'd think with a signed agreement, it'd be, pretty straightforward, right? Like black and white. But this case shows how family law, it's rarely ever that simple, Groves. She sues to, enforce the visitation agreement. And this thing, this case goes through all these twists and turns. It's like a legal roller coaster or something.
Okay, well, walk me through it. What was the first big turn on this roller coaster?
All right, so first, the case lands in district court, right? And in a move that surprised, I think, a lot of people, the court, they void the entire agreement. They basically said, adoption finality trumps all. It's done, over, end of story.
Wow. Okay, so round one goes to the adoptive parents. But I'm guessing this isn't where it ends.
You would be right. Groves, she wasn't giving up. She takes it all the way up, all the way to the Montana Supreme Court. And now this is where it gets really interesting. Buckle up. The Supreme Court, they reverse the lower court's ruling. They're saying that these, visitation agreements, they can be enforceable.
Well, wait, so these agreements, they carry real weight. Even after the adoption's done and dusted, that seems like a pretty monumental shift.
It was a pretty big change in how people were thinking about these things. But, and this is a big bit, but the Supreme Court, they added a huge caveat. They said, whether these agreements are enforceable, whether they actually hold water, it all comes down to one thing, just one thing. Is it in the best interest of the child? So they punt the case back to the district court to figure that out. Go back and do your homework.
So even if you've got a signed agreement, everyone's names are on everything, the court can still come in and say, nah, this isn't good for the kid.
You got it. And that's why this whole case, it's so important. It's setting this precedent, this idea that when it comes to family law, the court, they've got this duty. They have to protect the child, even if that means going against what the adults have agreed to. It's like, sorry, folks, kid comes first.
Gotcha. So back to the district court we go. Round two, what went down?
Well, they have their hearings, they listen to testimony, all that. And in the end, the district court says, yeah, there's a bond between Groves and Elsie, a real bond. And keeping that going, they say that's in her best interest. But they didn't just, reinstate the original agreement, poof, back in place.
There's the twist. So what'd they do?
They decided to modify it. They said visitation, that's a good thing. But it needs some, some structure. So they put together a schedule, guidelines, more specific stuff.
So the court's saying, okay, we agree with the big picture here, but we're going to tweak the little details.
Yeah.
I'm guessing the Clarks weren't exactly thrilled about that.
Nope, not at all. They appealed again, said they had new evidence, things that should change the court's mind. But the Montana Supreme Court, they weren't budging. They upheld the modified visitation order and, said no to a new trial. So after all that legal back and forth, the court basically sided with the birth mother. They were like, hey, post-adoption visitation, when it's done right, it can be a really good thing for a child. It's not something to, be scared of.
Okay, so lots of legal wrangling, but in the end, a win for Groves.
Mm-hmm.
And a pretty powerful statement about, those biological ties and how they can be beneficial. But let's dig into the legal nitty-gritty here. What are the big arguments, the big ideas that were at play in this case?
Well, it all comes down to this thing called the best interests standard. It's like, you know, the guiding principle in family law when you're dealing with kids. It's all about them.
Could you break that down for our listeners? Like, in real world terms, what does that actually mean?
Sure. So basically, whenever courts have to decide something about a child, custody, visitation, whatever, the kid's well-being, that's the top priority. It's like trump card overrides everything else. Doesn't matter if there's a signed contract, the court can step in and be like, hold up, this ain't right for the kid. It's their call.
So in this situation, they were like, maintaining that connection with the birth mother, even though the Clarks weren't on board, that was what was truly best for LC. Okay, I get that. But how did they reach that conclusion? What were they looking at?
They looked at a bunch of things, like, you know, was there a bond between Groves and LC, like a real emotional connection? How often did they see each other? What was the quality of their interactions? That kind of stuff. They really dug deep.
So it wasn't just like, oh, they're biologically related, case closed. They were looking at how that relationship actually played out in real life.
Yeah, exactly. And that's so important for anyone working in family law. You can't just assume the court's going to get it. You got to show them, you know. Bring in evidence, experts, really make the case for why a certain setup, like visitation, is the best thing for the child. You got to prove it.
Evidence is king. What kind of evidence was really convincing in this case?
Well, the experts, they played a huge role. Psychologists, they came in and talked about, you know, what could happen if LC's bond with Groves was cut off? What would that do to her psychologically? They talked about how crucial it is for kids to understand their roots, you know, where they come from, and how if you take that away, it can really mess with their sense of self later on.
That makes total sense. It's like knowing your story, even if it's complicated, helps you figure out who you are.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And they also talked about the risk of, like, abandonment trauma. Even though Groves made the decision to give up custody, she was still there, you know, a constant in Elsie's life. To suddenly cut that off, the expert said that could do some real damage.
Wow. So the court was really considering the emotional side of things, the psychological impact. It wasn't just a black and white legal matter.
Absolutely. And I think it shows how the law is changing, you know, for the better. It's starting to recognize that these emotional and psychological things, they matter. They're part of a child's development.
Okay, so we've got the best interest standard, we've got the experts weighing in, but there's this other piece of the puzzle that I'm super curious about. This whole contract law versus family law thing. It's fascinating.
Yeah, that's where things get really interesting. Gets you thinking, right?
You've got this agreement, signed and sealed, between Groves and the adoption agency. But then the courts come in and say, hold on, we're calling the shots here. Mm. Seems kind of counterintuitive, right? Like,
yeah.
Why does the court get to overrule a contract?
It's because family law courts, they're different. They have the special job, you know, protecting kids. They're not just reading contracts and saying, yep, looks good. They're making decisions that can, like, shape a child's whole life. It's a huge responsibility.
So even though there's this legal document, the court can say, nope, this ain't in the kid's best interest. We're changing things up.
That's exactly it. You can't just, like, sign away the court's duty to protect a child. It just doesn't work that way.
So it's like the court is saying, we appreciate you guys making this agreement, but we got to put on our child welfare hats and make sure this is truly the right path for this little one.
You nailed it. And Groves v. Clark, it's a textbook example of that idea in action. It's like, this is how it works, folks.
This case really highlights how complicated this stuff can be, you know, and how important it is to have a good lawyer, someone who gets it, on your side, someone who's compassionate and knows the ins and outs of family law. It's a tough situation all around.
It really is. No easy answers. It really is. And it, you know, it shows how tough it is for the courts sometimes. They got to find that balance, you know. But going back to, you know, the actual legal stuff, Groves v. Clark, this case, it gives us some real world examples of what the courts look at when they're trying to decide what's in a child's best interests.
That's what I was thinking about. It's funny to say, like, the court cares about what's best for the kid, but how do they actually figure that out? What are they, like, measuring? What were the big things in this case that swayed them?
Right, right. Remember, the Montana Supreme Court, they sent it back to the district court and said, hey, figure out if this visitation thing is really good for LC. But they didn't just leave them hanging. They gave them some, like, guidelines, things to focus on.
Oh, so like a checklist to make sure they're making the right decision.
Exactly. They laid out specific factors that the court had to consider. They couldn't just, like, wing it.
Okay, I'm curious. What were some of those big factors, the ones they said were super important?
Well, one of the biggest ones was the bond between Groves and Elsie. The court, They really wanted to understand their relationship, you know, how close were they? How often did they hang out? Was it like a good relationship or was it strained?
So they weren't just looking at like a birth certificate. They wanted to see how that mother-daughter connection played out in their everyday lives.
You got it. And that's a really important point for, you know, any lawyer who works with families. You can't just assume the court's going to understand the situation. You got to show them. Evidence, expert testimony, you got to build a strong case to explain why a certain arrangement, like visitation or whatever, is truly in the child's best interest. You can't just, like, hope they'll get it.
So evidence is everything. In this case, what kind of evidence really made a difference? Like, what really convinced the court?
The expert testimony, that was huge. They had psychologists come in and talk about what could happen if LC lost that connection with Groves, you know, like what would the psychological impact be? And they also talked about like the importance of kids understanding their roots, their biological family, where they come from, their background, and how, you know, being cut off from that can make it really hard for kids to like figure out who they are.
Right. Right. It's like you need all the pieces of the puzzle to see the full picture, even if some of those pieces are, you know, kind of rough around the edges.
That's a good way to put it. And they also talked about the possibility of, like, abandonment trauma. You know, even though Groves made the choice to give up custody, she was still a part of Elsie's life. She was there, a constant presence. And the experts, they were saying that to suddenly cut that off, it could be really damaging to Elsie, like, emotionally.
That's fascinating. So the court was really thinking about all these different angles, the potential emotional and psychological effects. They weren't just looking at it as, like, a simple legal contract dispute.
Exactly. And, you know, it's encouraging to see the law evolving, you know, to consider these psychological factors in a child's development. They're not just like little robots. They have feelings.
Right. So we've talked about the best interest standard and how important the expert testimony was in this case. But there's another layer here that I find like really intriguing, this whole tension between contract law and family law. It's like two different worlds colliding.
Ah, yeah, that's where things get really interesting. It starts to make you think, doesn't it?
Totally. So you've got this agreement, right? All signed and official between Groves and the adoption agency. But then the courts basically say, wait a minute, we have the final say here? It seems a little backwards, you know? Why does the court get to overrule a contract? It's a legally binding document.
It all comes down to the unique role family law courts have. It's like, their top priority is protecting children. That's their job. It's not just about like interpreting contracts. They're making decisions that can like change the course of a kid's life forever. It's a big deal.
So even if everyone signed on the dotted line, the court can step in and say, you know what? This isn't actually what's best for the child. We're changing things up. They have that power.
Exactly. You can't just like sign away a court's power to make sure a child is safe and well cared for. It's not how it works.
It's like the court is saying, we appreciate the effort you put into this agreement, but we got to put on our child welfare hats here and make sure this is the right path for this child.
Perfect way to put it. And Groves v. Clark, it's like the perfect illustration of that principle in action, like a case study.
This case really shows just how complex these situations are. It's not just black and white, right?
Yeah.
And it really underscores how important it is to have like a really good lawyer by your side, someone who understands all the nuances of family law and, you know, can guide you through the process, someone who gets it.
Couldn't agree more. These are delicate situations. You need someone who knows what they're doing.
Absolutely. So let's zoom out a bit. What's the big takeaway from Groves v. Clark? Like, how did this case change things, not just in Montana, but, you know, for open adoption in general? Did it have a ripple effect?
Oh, it definitely made waves. It put post-adoption visitation agreements, you know, on the map. It was like, hey, these are legit, but with big BUT. Of course, the court made it clear that these agreements, they got to be in the best interests of the child. That's the bottom line.
So it wasn't like a free pass for visitation. It was more like, hey, these agreements, if they're done right, if they're thought out and put the child first, they can be a good thing, a positive tool.
Right, exactly. And the impact of this case, it went way beyond Montana. A lot of other states, they saw what happened with Groves v. Clark and were like, interesting. And they started changing their own laws, you know, recognizing these post-adoption contact agreements, making them more official, you know, regulating them.
So Groves v. Clark, even though it happened in Montana, it kind of paved the way for a whole new way of thinking about adoption, more nuanced, more focused on what's best for the kid. That's a pretty big legacy for one case.
It really is. It marked a real turning point in how we understand adoption. It's not so simple anymore.
Okay, so we've covered the legal ins and outs and the big picture impact. But before we move on, I want to bring it back down to earth. You know, what are the key takeaways for lawyers, especially those working with families, when they're dealing with post-adoption visitation agreements? What do they need to keep in mind? What have we learned?
Well, one of the big lessons is that these agreements, you got to draft them carefully, like really carefully. You got to think about all the what ifs, what could happen down the road. Things change, families change, kids change. And you got to make sure the agreement is flexible enough to adapt to those changes.
So it's not just like scribble down a few things and call it a day.
No. You got to think ahead. Think about what could happen, you know? Changes in family dynamics, the kids' needs changing as they grow up, even like unexpected life events, things you can't predict.
So like lawyers need to be kind of like fortune tellers.
Uh-huh. Well, maybe not fortune tellers, but they definitely got to be forward thinkers.
Love that. Okay, what else? What other advice would you give to lawyers who are working on these cases?
It's crucial to make sure both sets of parents, the adoptive parents and the birth parents, understand that the court's priority is always, always the child's well-being. It comes before everything else, even a contract. Things can change, and the court has the final say in what's best for the kid.
So, like, managing expectations is super important. Making sure everyone's on the same page in the beginning.
Absolutely. And, you know, the child's best interest, that should be at the heart of every conversation, every decision, every step of the way. That's the guiding principle.
That's such great advice. This whole case, it really highlights how sensitive these situations are, you know, and how important it is to have good legal representation. Someone who's not just knowledgeable, but also compassionate. Someone who can help everyone navigate this, you know, tricky terrain.
This deep dive has been so insightful. I feel like, you know, we've really gotten into the weeds of post-adoption visitation agreements. But before we wrap things up, is there anything else from Groves v. Clark, like a particular detail or something that really stuck with you, something you found especially insightful? You know, what really strikes me is how this case wasn't just about, you know, laws and procedures. It was about real people, real emotions. It would be easy to get caught up in all the legal back and forth, but at the end of the day, this was about families and, you know, the impact this whole thing had on their lives. It's easy to forget that sometimes.
It's a good reminder that law isn't just like this abstract thing. It's about people, relationships, and let's be real, things can get messy. It's not always, you know, neat and tidy.
Right. And there's this one quote from the court's decision that really stuck with me. They were talking about Elsie's relationship with Groves. And they said it wasn't just about, you know, her sense of identity. It was also about her being able to, like, grieve. To grieve the loss of her biological family. They recognized that, you know, even though Groves made the decision to give up custody, that loss was still very real for Elsie, very painful. And keeping that connection with her birth mother, they said that could actually help her, you know, work through those tough emotions.
That's such a powerful point. It shows, you know, how complicated these situations can be. And sometimes those feelings, they don't fit into neat little boxes.
Absolutely. And it's a reminder that, you know, kids aren't just blank slates. They come with their own histories, their own connections, emotional needs. And the legal system, it has to recognize that, has to respect that.
Couldn't have said better myself. So, as we wrap up our deep dive into Groves v. Clark, what's the big takeaway? What's the one thing you really hope our listeners remember from this case? What's the most important lesson here?
I think the big takeaway is that post-adoption visitation agreements, they're not just, you know, pieces of paper. They're a chance to build healthy relationships, strong relationships, but they require, you know, a lot of care, a real sensitivity to everyone's needs. And you got to be willing to adapt, you know, because things change.
At the end of the day, it's all about what's best for the child. That's got to be the guiding principle.
You got it. The child's well-being, that's the North Star.
I love that. Well, this has been an amazing conversation. So insightful. Thank you so much for, you know, sharing your expertise with us today.
It's been my pleasure. These are important issues, and I'm always happy to, you know, talk about them, shed some light on them.
And to our listeners, we hope you found this deep dive into Groves v. Clark, you know, helpful. We hope it got you thinking as you continue to, you know, navigate the world of family law. Remember what we talked about today. Keep those lines of communication open. Be flexible. And never lose sight of the child's well-being. That's what matters most. Until next time, keep on learning, keep on diving deep.